Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User-Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User-Friendly 2.0. Welcome to this week's show. Got a great show for you? Send us your questions, send us your comments. We're one User-Friendly on Facebook and Twitter, or you can call us. 503-766-6264. We take your calls and put them on the air and answer your questions. Got some great events planned for next year. It looks like we're going to be covering Wizard World in Portland in January, and a whole bunch of other things that are lining up that we'll talk about as more and more of it gets confirmed. What do we have in the news today?
RCS service exposing users to call text interception.
Yeah, so this is an interesting thing, and this is totally a problem that's because the carriers are not implementing this properly. So what RCS is, to start with that, is it stands for Rich Communication Services. And up until this has been implemented, most of us have been using something called SMS, or Simple Message System, that sends our text messages back and forth to a user. So when you send a text message on your phone, there's a protocol that does that, and that's the name of the protocol. They did an add-on to it called MMS, which allows you to send pictures and sound and those type of things. But this is a system that's supposed to replace all of that with a new, modern, secure system. The only problem is if you don't set it up right, it's not secure. So this is something that we're going to be following along and watching to see how they get this fixed. But you're already seeing it come out on the phone services. Unfortunately, it's not working quite right yet.
So what does this mean? That somebody else can get a message that I send to you?
Yeah, it's two things, actually. They can do that. And the other end of it is they're actually able to generate a message or a call that looks like it's coming from you.
Oh, that's not very nice.
No.
Okay, apparently Amazon is seeking permission to launch 3,236 internet satellites.
Yes, we need more satellites. And
the aliens are never going to show up because they can't get through all
the satellites. They can't get through anymore. Yeah, there's traffic jam in space and orbit there. It's
space junk.
Yeah, one of those type of things. Now, what's going on here is a number of companies, this time Amazon, is looking for permission to launch a number of satellites to create low orbit internet access. And we've had satellite internet access for a long time. In fact, we've talked about it here on the show before, but it has its problems. And I know back when I used it, which was a number of years ago now, there was a lot of latency. You had to wait for the signal to bounce and bounce back and all this kind of stuff. And while it was better at the time than dial-up, it wasn't what I would consider good. You certainly couldn't game on it. And a lot of things became very, very frustrating. So this is an idea to be able to bring internet worldwide by using low-orbit satellites that don't have a latency problem with the signal. They're closer, they work faster, and that type of a thing. And there can certainly be some advantages to this and a few disadvantages. And one of them is?
Telescopes are blocked.
Yeah. Yes.
Earth-based telescopes.
And this is the disadvantage, one of the big ones that we're starting to have. Ground-based telescopes are blocked because of all the satellites that are already in orbit. SpaceX and a number of other companies have started doing this. The other concern that's coming up about this, too, is this idea, and it's something that we actually were able to talk to NASA about earlier in the year down in California, is that there is this idea that if you have a satellite get destroyed or blow up, it can start this chain reaction or this effect that can take out the satellite next to it, and then finally create a huge problem. And it would take quite a long time for all of that to drop back out of orbit. So it could really be a bad situation if this isn't handled just right.
But do you know if they ever like clean any of these old satellites up, like a garbage man, pick up the junk?
Yeah, from my understanding, that would be very difficult.
Okay.
In fact, there are some satellites that are still up there from when they first started doing this back in the 50s and 60s to test it out. And there's one that's known as a ghost satellite that disappeared for 30 years and then came back online a few years ago. That's still in orbit, and they think it's flipping around, and when its solar panels hit the sun, it turns on, and then it turns back off because the batteries on it, of course, are long since dead. But this type of a thing is something that we're going to definitely have to think about, but the idea of space junk is very much a problem and is something that NASA and other space agencies are very concerned about and is a situation that could go really wrong if it's not handled right. So when you look at launching all of these new satellites, we also need to be concerned about some of the repercussions of it. There's always advantages and disadvantages to new tech, and this is definitely one of the disadvantages.
Ethos paid $1.135 billion for .org.
All right, so top-level domains. We've also talked about this a little bit in the past on the show. are your .com, .org, .net, and there's a lot of them now that go beyond those. Those are some of the original ones. .edu is another. And what it is there's organizations that have these registries, and what they do is they own basically every domain name at that .extension, in this case .org, and then they license that out to the registers that we use to actually register a domain name. And Ethos has paid $1.135 billion, with a B, for everything on .org. So now when you register a .org domain name, it will go through them as the primary top-level domain register. This doesn't change a lot for us in the sense that we would still go to DirectNIC or whoever, GoDaddy, whatever service you use. You still register your domain names, but the one thing that they can do is set the fees for them and those type of things. So, you know, it's something to keep an eye on, but it just is interesting how much that was worth.
Police can keep your Ring doorbell videos forever.
So, Jeremy, you've also found the press release on this originally. What do you think of that?
According to what we've seen, if you allow it to be your videos to be shared, the police can access them, and then they can give them to whoever they want.
Right.
So you could get like four or five services down the road, somebody else looking at the videos that you shared. And it seems like people are trying to keep the police from accessing their videos. So it has to do with the initial sharing. But once it's shared, it's out there forever and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, I reached out to Ring on this to find out what was actually going on. And that's basically correct. You have the option to not share a video. But once you do, you seem to lose control of it. At least that's what it's looking like. And the police are allowed to maintain it as long as they want, reuse it for whatever reason, even if it doesn't depict a crime. And I think my biggest concern on this, just my opinion of the matter, is when you're walking down the street and everybody has Ring doorbells, I have one, you're on video, and our rapidly disappearing privacy is even more affected by that, as this information is out there, and you possibly are being videoed when you don't even know it.
Okay. Google's Larry Page steps down.
Yeah, Larry is a visionary. Larry Page is a visionary, somebody that I have always thought was very remarkable in what he was able to accomplish. He took the company Google that we all know, the search company, from a garage and made it really what it is today. And he's stepping down. He's still going to be on the board, and he still maintains, along with his co-CEO, the ownership rights, voting rights, and all that kind of thing. But like with Bill Gates leaving Microsoft, it is very much, in my opinion, the end of an era. And just something to see how these things continue to move along and that type of thing. But we do say goodbye to Larry Page, at least from his role administering Google, as he has for the last number of years. So we're now in December, Gretchen, which means NaNoWriMo has come to an end for this year. How did it go?
Well, I did not make the 50K goal.
Okay, so does that mean you get euthanized, or what happens?
No, I don't get euthanized, and it's not that big of a deal. I did not start on the first day of November, so I kind of knew it was going to be harder than normal.
Right.
And then there's Thanksgiving, which always makes it difficult, and then we also did an event.
Yeah.
So every one of those days, you lose time that could be spent writing. So I gave myself permission not to make 50K.
So how did you do?
I got 32K.
32K. Okay, well, that's not so bad. That's more than half. I mean, writing is not easy. So
I think that's commendable. And that's at least 1,000 words a day.
Right, right.
And on top of it, I wasn't just writing a story. I was constructing the outline.
Right, right.
And that involves research. And making sure that things are correct and developing characters and concepts for characters. So that takes a little more time than just simply pounding out dialogue and descriptions and things out of my head.
Right. For anyone that may not be familiar with it, NaNoWriMo is a contest that's held every year, the goal being to write 50,000 words through the month of November, correct?
Yes, and apparently, if I'm correct, I think this is their 20th year doing it.
Okay, so this has been going on for a while, so 32,000. So, and you were just saying that you did an outline.
Yeah, and now I'm working on the main story. It's not like it stops after the month of November, concludes. Keep working on it.
So what's the idea of this? Just to get writers started or give you some kind of a motivation, or how does that work?
I think it's for both. I think it's to motivate writers. I think it's to get them started, to keep them from feeling afraid of putting those first few words down onto the paper. Because I think that scares a lot of people.
Yeah, well, it's hard to get I know I have writer's block every so often, too. Well, so what was your high point of this year, do you think?
My high point?
Yeah, what did you enjoy the most about it?
Actually, just getting the outline done. And I think it's a good. It's going to be a good story.
No, that sounds great. We'll have to see what happens next year.
Yeah.
This is User-Friendly 2.0. We're going to be back after the break with a couple of good segments for you, a Q&A, and all of the normal stuff. This is User-Friendly 2.0. Welcome back. This is User-Friendly 2.0, and believe it or not, the holidays are upon us. I can't believe we're here.
Yeah.
You know,
avalanche.
It's like an avalanche, and it comes quickly. I mean, we were already through Halloween and Thanksgiving, and now we're moving on to Christmas, and it's absolutely amazing that this time of year, this year has just gone by like a whirlwind, you know?
Yes, it has.
Yeah.
So, one of the things to talk about this time of year is holiday lights. It's very likely that you're either decorating now or already have. And technology has changed this a lot, just like anything else in our lives. And it's kind of interesting to look and see what's out there. Back, I know growing up, the lights on the tree and in the windows and everything, you plugged them in when you wanted them on and unplugged them when you didn't. And that was basically how that was set up. And I understand we don't do things that way anymore.
Well, also, the old lights, if you touched them, you'd get burned.
Yeah, there was heat. There was heat.
Oh, yeah. And I remember on our old tree, it had it was a fake tree and it had plastic needles. And if you didn't place these bulb lights the right way, it would start to melt the needles. So,
yeah. And that was still a step up from the days of actually using candles in the tree, which is what they originally used to do.
Well, you know? Yeah.
So there was some.
Yeah, things have really changed.
But, you know, and one of the first things that I think is very much of interest with this is power consumption, because like with anything else, the traditional Christmas tree lights and holiday lights and all of that are incandescent, which means they have a filament. So switching to LED is a lot like switching just the lights in your house to LED.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And, you know, one of the things that I found very interesting with this was the cost to run all this stuff. So just one source that we have here that talks about this is, for a basic setup of decoration, which would include lights on the roof, lights in the yard, a walkway, a tree, and all of the normal things we do, would draw a total of about 18,332 watts, doing it all with traditional lights. So that's what we used to use. Using an average for power, that would cost about $310 to run it for the season. Switching over to LED takes that down to 2,369 watts, or about $40.
So, yeah, it's a big deal.
It's huge.
Yeah.
There's certainly a cost, like with everything, to changing out your light strands and upgrading and all that kind of stuff. But it does seem like from this, if nothing else, you lose the heat and you also lose a great deal of the actual power bill that it would take to run this stuff.
And these little LED, like the little ones that you put outside, because you're always worried when you have lights outside, they're little glass things that are fragile. And you can have storms or animals that show up in your yard or people. Yeah. And these LEDs seem to be sturdier.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a smaller bulb. And a lot of times they're made out of plastic instead of glass, too.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's kind of nice. Yeah.
It also reduces the weight.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a little bit of an added side effect. And from my standpoint as an engineer, there's so much more you can do with these. So you can go to the store and just get a set of LED lights and they'll look pretty in your colors and all of that different kind of stuff. Or you can take it a step further. And I'm trying out a product this year from Lowe's called Twinkly.
Twinkly?
Yes. And it's
That's a lovely name.
Yeah, I didn't name it. But,
sounds like the name of an elf.
Yeah, I think probably. Anyway, this is actually a set of smart lights that are holiday lights, and you control them from an app, and you can put them all together like a hue system or that type of a thing, and control the colors and the changing of the colors and what's on and what's off and all of that kind of thing. And it's really kind of cool. It's 105 count, 5mm LED bulbs per strand. You can connect two together per setup on the app and control all of them. So it actually gives you a lot of ability to sit there and monkey around with it and set them up so they look nice and work well. And one of the other nice things about smart lights like this is you can control them to turn on and turn off automatically from your phone. And you don't have to set up things like timers.
Oh, well, I love them on timers.
And you know, the funny thing is the timers are still a step ahead from plugging them in and unplugging them.
Yes, they are. And it makes it easier if you don't have to go outside and plug it in and then unplug it.
Yeah, because if you wanted to leave them on late and then you forget and you go to sleep and you wake up in the middle of the night going, oh no, I forgot to turn the lights off and it's going to cost me all this, you know, electricity. So the timers are great.
Yeah. No, it, you know, these type of things make a difference. And there's actually, and this actually is a listener question that came in, is the ability to control lights and deal with that type of a thing. Because like you say, there's some different approaches, the timer being one of them. And I have a friend that actually still has one of those old timers that actually has a motor in it. So you're hearing this thing grind and run, but it works and it turns them on and turns them off. A product that I've used for a couple of years, which is pretty simple, is a wireless remote control smart plug. So this isn't a system that actually ties into a smart assistant or anything like that. It's just, it's a thing that goes in the outlet. And then mine controls up to three different locations, but you can get them in different capacities. And the remote control has an on and off button. So pretty simple. So when you want to turn it on, you don't have to crawl behind anything or that type of thing. You just push on and turns them on. Push off, it turns them off. Now there's no timer associated with that. It's just basically a remote switch that you can actually set up and put it together and that type of a thing.
Does that work outside?
They can work outside. They do make waterproof versions of it.
Oh, okay.
And that actually also is something very important that I learned this year is when you rig lights outside, you want to be careful of this because I needed to run an extension cord and I wanted to run it out of the end of one set of lights and into the, you know, another one over the porch because I didn't want lighting on the top. And it turns out that's not safe. And what I learned about this is the lights do not have the ability to plug in without the polarized pin. So, you know, the socket on it has like a bigger pin on one side than the other.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have ground. And what they do is because the most light strands are fused, that actually is safe. But if you change that, like my first thing was, well, I'll just cut the plug off and get one that fits. Don't do that. because it can cause problems and it also won't be weatherproof anymore.
Right.
And if you're doing things outside, you definitely want to be aware of that. And the other thing to consider on remote control for lighting is actually using a smart plug. And then you can use this with a smart assistant or with your phone or that type of a thing. And they're not, those have really come down in price. And they actually do make a waterproof version of that that has two separate plugs on it that will go outside. And you can put it in a box and that'll work really well. And then that you can set up with the timers as you would a smart lighting system if you have one and have them turn on and off automatically there. So what kind of lights are you guys putting up this year?
Well, we actually misplaced our timer, so we had to go to Home Depot and get another one.
Oh, okay.
But we're doing the low-tech thing where you just plug it into the outdoor outlet and it has the little timer and you can have 2, 4, 6, or 8 hours or apparently it does dusk till dawn. And so it must have like a light sensor in it. So we're just going to do that and put some lights around the door and then the bushes and things like that.
Yeah, we're really not up for individually addressing the 3,000 light bulbs.
No.
Well, you're not going to program each one individually? Well, that's kind of weird.
No, I'm really not up for that right now.
No, I totally understand. And listeners, if you want to make fun of them for doing a low-tech solution,
Please
get a hold of us over social media at One User Friendly. Let us know what you're doing this year and send your pictures. We'll get them up on the show's Twitter and Facebook pages and see what you've got out there.
That would be fun.
Yes.
And talk about this a little bit going forward. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. What questions do we have this week?
What do you consider a good smartphone? Do I have to spend $1,000?
Well, I consider the one that I just had not a good smartphone. Does that count?
No.
Yeah, I'm not happy with that.
I do have to say, I have noticed that you do get a little bit of what you pay for here, but the short answer to this question is no, you don't have to spend $1,000. There are some good options on the market. And what you really need to do is look at the features that you need. One of the things that we're doing is switching over to a Pixel 3a, which is last year's model of the Pixel, to try and save a little bit of money and not have to put up this huge amount of money up front, but still get all of the features we want. So some of the differences that you want to look for is how the phone is constructed. Is it plastic versus metal? Does it have wireless charging? What's the camera like? How fast is the camera? That's a problem we ran into with our old ones, that it would take a picture just fine, but it would take like 5 seconds to cycle back. So if you're wanting to take a lot of pictures, you want to know that that works properly. Read the reviews and see what you think. Now, not mentioning the brand here because I don't want to pick on them too badly, but what were some of the disadvantages you guys saw with your old smartphones?
It's not waterproof. The keyboard was really weird.
Oh, the keyboard was terrible.
The on-screen touchscreen, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't a QWERTY.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I don't have giant, you know...
ham hands?
No, I don't have ham hands.
And the other weird features on the phone was the power button... I guess would get pressed in my pocket, and so the phone would shut off randomly.
It did weird things.
Or go into non-disturb. That was the other thing I had.
Yeah, that's just
so this is all stuff you want to check out. I mean, it's just important to figure out if it works properly. Read the reviews, see what other people have, and if you buy one, make sure that you can return it if you don't like it, because you might find that it just doesn't work for you.
Okay. How long should a smartphone last?
Yeah, this is another good question that came in this week, too. And if you're going to spend $1,000 or even a couple hundred, you're buying basically a little computer. That's what they are. And if you take care of it properly, my finding is that you should get between 2 and 3 years out of it. Now, that is actually that it comes on, it works, the screen works, all that kind of stuff. You'll find that the tech itself will become obsolete, usually faster than the phone itself will break down. As long as you handle it properly. Now, if you drop it and break the screen and all these things have happened to all of us at one time or another, then of course that's very different. And you have to consider that that's not really the phone being defective. It's just an accident.
Yeah. Like with our Samsungs, those worked really well. They lasted well. I never had any problems with mine until the carrier sabotaged it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we ran into that, and that wasn't our opinion either. The carrier actually told us they sabotaged it. So it was, you got to watch out for these things. One other suggestion that I do make on this too, and you don't want to be insurance poor, and there's the possibility to buy too much service plans and that type of thing, but a phone is a device that gets bumped around a lot, and considering accident insurance on it might not be the worst idea, especially if it's a higher end phone like an iPhone or one of the Samsung Galaxies. So if you do break a screen, there's usually a deductible, but it's still worth doing the repair on it. And then if it malfunctions, you have that option too.
All right. Is it worth spending the money to go to Comic-Con International? I guess that's San Diego?
That would be San Diego. Okay. All right. I'll give you my opinion and let's get yours. My opinion was I did like going down to it. We went for 2 years. I don't know if I'll go again or not, but I'm glad we went.
Yeah, I enjoyed actually being there. It was the other process of the parking and the hotels and the rental cars and the flights and all the other stuff. But the actual event was awesome.
Yeah, and I would say the event itself is something, if you're a cosplayer, I would say not so much, but just as a regular, you put on your favorite cool t-shirt and walk around and just have a good time looking at everything and going to the panels and things.
Now, that's not to say you can't cosplay, but I did notice there were so many people, it was more difficult to...
It was too crowded.
...to deal with stuff, yeah, and it was the thing. Yeah. The convention center is about a mile long. So you do want to wear your walking shoes, and you get some new announcements and find out things firsthand, and it was a lot of fun. But do a budget. Make sure you know what you're going to spend.
Exactly.
Oh, our smart TV secure. I've been seeing warnings.
Jeremy, I'm going to let you comment on this first, because you're the one that got the press release on this initially.
Yeah, apparently the FBI is warning everybody because of all the TVs that were purchased on Black Friday and all the way through Cyber Monday. And I guess going on through Cyber Week, they're smart TVs. So they have the cameras built in and the microphones built in. And apparently when they're set up, they're just given the basic low-end security stuff because they are assuming that you, as the purchaser, are going to change it.
Right. And the key here is make sure you do. Get on, change the password. Don't use the defaults because that's the best way the bad guys can get in. This is User-Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break.
From the future, he's got a really big computer, and he uses it.
Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Send us your questions. Send us your comments. One User Friendly on Facebook and Twitter. Give us a call, 503-766-6264. One of your questions has been about streaming services. We've talked a little bit over the last few weeks about PlayStation View going away. And what I thought we'd do is take some time to talk about what all of this actually is and what it's doing. And where this started is the idea of cord cutting. So not so long ago for cable television, pay television, we all, or most of us, would have used some kind of a service if we wanted something beyond the on-air broadcast, where you bring in a line and there's a box and that line comes to the box and the box tunes the channel, and you could pay for services like the ability to record or the ability to have the scene on different televisions or high definition or all these kind of things. And that has changed a lot. And one of the newest services that has just come out is one called Disney Plus. Jeremy, you were the first of us to subscribe to that. What do you think?
Well, actually, I'm quite enjoying it. It's got a TV series from the 90s that I haven't seen in a while that I was able to watch again. Got more current TV series that I am enjoying. And it's got just dozens and dozens of movies and some of the stuff that I haven't seen in years.
Yeah, it was nice to see Cinderella.
Right. That was the question I was going to ask. This service has a number of different franchises on it.
Yes, Disney being one of them. It's basically all the properties that Disney owns. So you've got Disney. You've got Marvel, you've got Star Wars, we've got Fox.
And National Geographic.
Okay, so how much does this cost?
It's $6.95 a month, or it's like $70 a year.
Okay, so, and if you, I assume, yeah, the math would say if you do it for a year, you save a few bucks.
Yes.
So the question that I have to ask then is, this is actually a little less cost than what a premium channel like HBO or something used to be.
Right.
So it seems like that's not a bad deal.
No, and actually, with the wide variety of stuff that I'm able to watch, it's not a bad deal for me. But then again, it doesn't give me local channels.
And there's also this advantage. If you've ever watched like the other Disney channels on cable, there are so many commercials. And the commercials are insanely annoying.
Yes.
Right? And you don't have those annoying commercials cutting in every 2 seconds.
Okay, so the service doesn't really have commercials. Nice.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the big problems that they've had so far has been, if you're watching The Simpsons, they've taken the classic episodes, you know, from 20 years ago, which are in a 4:3 ratio, and they're blowing it up to fit the 16:9 ratio, which cuts off a little bit on the top and a little bit on the bottom.
Right.
So you're missing some of the sight gags, and people are complaining about it.
Right. Yeah. And one of the examples I saw was that it had to do with Duff Brewery, and there was a pipe feeding three different kinds, but it was all the same kind, but you couldn't see it because of this change.
Right. Oh. Yeah, they cut it off. It's at the very top of the screen, so you don't get to see that there's three different pipes leading from one main pipe to fill up the three vats of beer.
Right.
Okay. Which are three different kinds of beer, Duff Light, Lady Duff.
So why didn't they just leave it as it was?
We don't know.
Oh, okay.
So my understanding is they are planning to put it back at some point and give you that choice.
Yes, they are.
But it seems like with any new service, you could have month. Difficulties with this. Yeah, it's weird that that's next month. But now, my understanding is that they actually got about 10 million subscribers in the first day of launch.
Yes, they did. So, and it slowed down a little, which could be our internet or it could be them. But I was able to watch all the shows I wanted to watch.
Yeah, and some of the original programming on some of these services have been really nice. I love The Mandalorian. And then on like Netflix, we just watched The Dragon Prince, which is an animated cartoon.
Right. Now, you bring up Netflix, and they seem to be one of the ones that maybe is having some problems because of all of this, because I've been understanding their subscriber base is going down. They've raised their prices for some of their custom programming, and, you know, it does cost money to make all these things, and some of their shows are things I know I really enjoy. So it seems like you do have to make some choices to figure out what you want to actually pay.
Right. And see, that you can get some movies through them as well as through, like, you know, Disney and the other ones. But a lot of the stuff that's on Netflix is all custom programming,
right,
stuff that they've paid for to have done. So that's, you know, one of those things that's kind of, do you want to see cool custom programming or do you want to see stuff you've already seen?
Right. And didn't Disney pull some stuff off Netflix to have it available on their system as well?
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
So you're starting to see it polarize a little bit?
Yes. Disney had all these things on Netflix and Hulu, so they had to move them all over to their own channel so that they can get all of their stuff under their own control.
Right, right. And that actually kind of makes sense because they'd want their own franchise. So One of the things you mentioned earlier, too, was the idea of live television channels, and that's not something you would get over this type of a service, but there's several of them out there. PlayStation View used to be a big one, but they're getting rid of it or they're shutting down at the end of January. But there's a number of other competitors out there, like Hulu, which actually does television. So does YouTube. And some of the bigger carriers like DirecTV has DirecTV Now, which is that type of a thing. And there's a lot of different pricing and a lot of different channels that are available. I know when I switched, I wanted the History Channel, so I looked for that. But that is another way to be able to get this type of a thing. Now, you both, I know, still use a classic cable TV provider, a satellite provider, don't you?
Yes.
So what has kept you from switching to an over-the-top service like this?
Basically, the idea is we have two different households, one upstairs and one downstairs, and we can't get the same things upstairs and down. So we had to do something different downstairs.
Right, right. And that's one thing to consider because they did provide all the equipment. Of course, you have to pay rental fees for all of this stuff. And if you do switch to an over-the-top service, you buy something like a Fire TV or a Roku or whatever you would use, and then put that on the televisions, and then that way you would have the same thing at all the different locations.
Right.
And one of the other things I know about that, too, that to me is an advantage, if you haven't figured it out, I like over-the-top services better than the classic cable, is that you don't have to run the wires. It'll work over your Wi-Fi, so if you don't have a cable outlet, it doesn't matter. You can move the television, you don't have all the stuff you have to rerun.
Yeah, and that's been our big feature downstairs.
Yeah.
So, and one of the other things I know too, again, that I like about these over the top television services is on some of them you can get your live channels for the area you're in. So if you want live network television, just like you would off the air or off the cable, you can have that. And the other side of it too is most of the different networks like History Channel and Home Garden TV, all that stuff, has apps. So in addition to being able to log in and see what they're actually broadcasting on their channel, it's like you have a DVR that contains everything that they've ever done. And I know, Jeremy, you use the History Channel.
Oh, yeah. I've been really enjoying a lot of their shows. It's been fun.
So just different things to consider. And we'll keep on top of this as it builds out. This is User-Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User-Friendly 2.0. Great episode today, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about the smart lighting and all that kind of stuff. And I think what, you know, as a world, we're looking for ways to save energy now. And I do think that this type of technology helps a lot with that because you actually have the idea that you don't forget to turn things off and you can monitor consumption. And some of the smart plugs will even tell you how much energy is being used on a lamp or whatever's plugged into it. So these are a lot of good ideas and a lot of kind of fun ways to be able to take it to the next level, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that idea.
So one question that came in is the cost of smart plugs, because I know just a couple of years ago, they were around $40 or $50, and I'm seeing them down just in a quick search here for as low as about 12 now.
That's kind of cool. So,
yeah, they've really dropped in price a lot.
Well, and I know there was that sale on Amazon, and it comes up randomly for smart plugs.
Right, right.
So yeah, if you're really looking for a smart plug, just, you know, put a watcher on Amazon for them, because you can get them for like $5.
Yeah, and watch for the specials. Make sure it's compatible with the system you want. That's the big thing. If you're using a specific kind of smart home system, you want to make sure that these work with it. Samsung SmartThings is, for example, is Z-Wave and Zigbee. So these protocols all do make a difference. And usually the packaging tells you what it does and doesn't work with.
Cool.
So, all right. And then the other thing, you know, I think that's interesting just to talk about a little bit is this whole idea of streaming services. We got into them a little bit. We kind of ran out of time there, but there's a lot of different things to look at. And one other thing I wanted to mention in that and didn't get a chance to is most of them have a trial for a week or two. So it's always good to give it a shot first and make sure that it works. As a for example, I cannot get Disney Plus to work here. I have not had the time to really sit down with it. It plays for 3 seconds and stops. I'm sure it's fixable, but everybody's network's different. Everybody's providers are different. It's just something to want to be aware of, kind of a little bit in addition to that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So free trials is always the best way to go and to figure it out.
Then it's a good thing that you were over here and watched The Mandalorian with us.
Yes, yes. And I mean, I haven't watched this week's episode yet, but I will. I'll get it working. That'll be my motivation.
Yes.
So send us your questions and comments and send us your pictures of your lighting displays this year so we can get them out on our social media. It's One User Friendly on Facebook and Twitter. You can also call us 503-766-6264. And the way that works is you call in anytime, leave your message on the voicemail, and then we will call you back or use your question on the show, depending on what you prefer. You don't have to go on the air, but you certainly can. And this is the way that we build out our programming and the way that we know what questions you want us to answer. And next year, we've started putting our events together based on the feedback we've gotten from this year. We're going to have the Wizard World Comic Con in Portland in January. And I know we're going back to Emerald City again this next year. And I think that we're also going to be going to the Star Trek convention in Las Vegas. At least that's the rumor I'm hearing. So we've got those. We're going to have some tech shows coming up for our next season. But send us your information and also check out the podcast at theanswerportland.com. We'll be back with you next week. This is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2019, User Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the host and not necessarily User Friendly Media Group, Inc. or the station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Podcast available at theanswerportland.com or userfriendlyshow.com.